Let's go to the top of the hill.
But here she comes, and the valley roars. Cometh the hour, cometh the legend. Greatness, Winks has done it.
Jungle Edge is going well. It's a muddy marble.
Now declare kick. Fairly declares bottom for Australia. They're on top of the world.
I'm on top of the world. I'm on top of the world.
With the voice of Victorian racing, Matt Hill.
I'm on top of the world.
Matty Hill. How are you, Matty boy?
I'm very well, thanks, Matty. Good to talk to you in a more relaxed mode as we reflect on a carnival.
Now, what most people don't know is that you and I, from time to time, have lengthy phone chats where we solved all the world's problems, don't we? And then we even drift into some of racing's issues as well. So we might even take some of those private chats to the airwaves today and see what happens.
Why not? I don't know if we can solve some of the world's problems, and we certainly can't solve the racing's problems, but we'll have a good chat anyway.
Well, we can at least identify a few of them anyway. Hey, just quickly, just on a personal level, with the what you bring to the table and the energy and the research and the pressure and so on, do you fall into a heap about now, most spring carnivals?
Oh, I fell into a heap about 2 weeks ago after Cup Week. I think it was a pretty demanding year this year for everybody at the track as well. I mean, I know it's a first world problem with such a massive global pandemic going on, and we've been lucky enough to be at work during this year. But it has been different. We didn't have the adrenaline rush that you would usually have with 80 or 90,000 people at Flemington each and every day of the carnival. So I think towards the end of the Melbourne Cup Carnival was difficult for most. But to have the 37 races, lots of horses, photo finishes, a lot of information that you're just consuming. And, a lot of it's on the run as well through the week, a lot of different changes and, taking in the form. So, yeah, your brain, you might as well put your brain in a blender for a week. But when it's all said and done, it's obviously very satisfying to reflect on it. But as you know, Matty, in racing, we don't get a lot of time to look back, do we? We push forward and we surge onto Sandown and then Ballarat over the weekend. And now we look forward to the Valley this weekend.
Was it easier or more difficult to motivate without the crowds there? Did you feel less pressure and it made it easier? Or do you feed off the crowd and the vibe in order to make it almost a little bit easier?
Yeah. No, you definitely, I think, take in the event a lot more when there's people there. I found that the actual job itself of calling the race wasn't affected really. We do exactly the same things, so 3 or 4 minutes before the race, once you've learnt the colours, you're focused and you know the importance of the race. And obviously I was aware that a lot of people, probably more people if anything, were listening and watching this year, so that certainly gets you to the line. But through quite a long year, we've been doing this since March, since the All-Star Bowl at Caulfield, where we didn't have a crowd. And after a while, that starts to wear thin, and it's not an event without a crowd. It's as simple as that. If you've got 80, 90,000 people do anything, it wouldn't matter if it was, ferrets running down the road. You had 90,000 people watching. It's an event, isn't it? So to have no crowd certainly made it, it was heartbreaking in many ways, especially on a day like Melbourne Cup Day where the weather was so fantastic. And you couldn't imagine the scenes on Derby Day if Dennis Pagan won the Derby in front of 80,000 people. I mean, it would have been unbelievable. But we put this year away, and hopefully by this time next year we're celebrating a lot happier times.
I reckon it's sort of skimmed over us for most of the lockout because of the fact that it was being through winter. You know, we lost the All-Star Mile, but then we sort of slipped into non-crowd racing right up until probably the last month or so. And Caulfield Guineas Day, I remember we spoke to Josh Blanksby, who was in the car park at Caulfield on Caulfield Guineas Day, and he said, this is when it's really hit me hard. There's no marquees, there's no dress-ups, there's no queues out the front, and that buzz of excitement, and then more at the Caulfield Cup, probably more again at the Cox Plate, but then for me, it was Cup Week, and I'm sure it was you too. We were up on the fifth level of the Peak Restaurant, the old members stand, and it behind the glass, which made it feel even more isolating. But right up there in the crow's nest where you were, it must have been The most overused word in the world is surreal, but I can't think of another one. Maybe eerie. That must have been when it really hit home to be hovering over that gigantic precinct where there was nothing but horses and tumbleweeds.
No doubt about that. And there's a great shot that the television cameras capture when the horses leave the home straight in a race like the Melbourne Cup or the Derby, and there's usually a sea of people in the grandstand behind the field of horses. And if you watch that Melbourne Cup back, and you know the 24 horses are charging out of the straight in Australia's most famous race, and there is literally no one in the grandstand. I mean, surreal is the word. It was bizarre. It was actually very sad as well, and to have. I love that scene before the Cup with Amanda Elliott holding the Cup aloft, and it was such a beautiful day on Melbourne Cup Day this year, and the way it had to be done with the social distancing. You just look over a racetrack like that and think, well, the world's got bigger problems than a horse race, but at the same time, it's just terribly sad to have to conduct a race meeting under those circumstances.
No, exactly right. I'm going to play your highlight, which I'm assuming this is your highlight, it's the Melbourne Cup, and then I'm going to play mine with Sir Dragonair. And then there's a few little cherry points I want to ask you about, bulletin points. So one is that the cluster of staying races at this time of year, Ballarat Cup, Pakenham Cup, what do we do with Sandown? And also the issue, obviously, of the elephant in the room that has been addressed, and that is of the fatalities in the Melbourne Cup. So we'll drift along into those, but let's just play a bit of action. Let's have a listen to your call of the final stages of the Melbourne Cup.
Twilight Payment at the 300 metres, still three lengths Finch, Tiger Moth the chosen one, running on with Russian Camelot and Persan. Twilight Payment tries to break their hearts, Tiger Moth wearing him down with the chosen one. It's Twilight Payment, Tiger Moth still trying to get there. Twilight Payment, what a ride, what a win in a cup we'll never forget, has won it from Tiger Moth and Prince of Arran third.
Trying to work out what was going through your head at about the 300 or 400 metre mark, when you're probably thinking last leader was Might and Power 20 years ago, but this thing's run quick time, but is there really anything coming at it? It's owned by Lloyd, it's ridden by Jai, it's a feel-good story. What was going through your head at about the 400?
Well, I think you're quite right. At the 400, you're always looking for horses to run on because you don't want to miss one. You don't want to get one too late when they come flying down the outside. So you're almost preparing yourself mentally to find something, and you're looking on the inside, you're looking on the outside, you're looking in the middle of a pack, is there something weaving through? And there just wasn't anything. So for that point, with about 250 metres from home, I'm thinking this might just hold on. And we'll talk about it in length shortly, but, you know, it was actually another sad part of the Melbourne Cup. We never really got a great chance for the rest of the week to talk about how good that ride was from a young man with an outstanding head on his shoulders to ride such a brave race, his first ride at a Melbourne Cup. That should have been the story on the Wednesday that the nation absolutely took hold of, and unfortunately it didn't. It was just a classic ride and a memorable Melbourne Cup for that very reason.
All right, we'll talk. You're referring to Anthony Van Dyke, and I'll tie that back in after we have a listen to Sir Dragonair winning the Cox Plate, because there is a link between horses like Armory and Sir Dragonair coming out and winning our greatest race, and then the ripple effect of some sour note stuff with the internationals as well. But let's have a little listen to Sir Dragonair.
Going with it, Sir Dragonair running on, and Probabil the fence in the straight at the 150. It's Armory. Sir Dragonair coming at Armory. Armory and Sir Dragonair. Sir Dragonair takes the lead, coming clear, and joins a century of legends. Sir Dragonair for Bossy won the Cox Plate from Armory, Russian Camelot.
Maddie, to me, we have a very weird relationship with the internationals. They second tier ones, with all due respect to Armory and Sir Dragonair, come out here and Quinella the Cox Plate. We saw the same thing with Adelaide, I think it was 2014. So when second tier horses come from overseas and knock off your best races, it sort of, to me, it doesn't necessarily reflect well on them or us. And then you get the situation in the Melbourne Cup where two out of every 3 years, as we've experienced in the last 3 years, we have an international fatality. So we have an unusual relationship with international horses in the Spring Carnival, don't we?
We do, and it's the races like the Cox Plate and the Melbourne Cup have had to evolve, and that's fair enough, and there's certainly no knock on the international horses wanting to come. It's a free-for-all, and they've come and they've conquered, and that's fair enough. It's interesting you talk about the second tier. I mean, what filled me with great pride was when Lee Grassier won the Cox Plate the year before and then went on to win in the most spectacular fashion in one of the greatest races in the world in Japan a month or two later. So it could be a year-by-year proposition. But I do think, and you talked about it with Matt Kamani earlier on, Matt, I think we're almost eating ourselves in many ways. Hit the Shot comes out and runs a cracking race in the Derby, one of our promising horses that we could follow in Australia, and gets sold to Hong Kong. Before the spring racing carnival, a real talking horse was by the name of Barocca. We thought this horse could be something else, and of course we'll never see Barocca again because it was sold to Hong Kong as well. So no doubt the second tier horses are coming here because we're getting rid of our horses. You know, money speaks all languages, so it's not just the international's fault for coming and claiming our races. We're eating ourselves in many ways.
Do you remember what you thought with the Cliffs of Moher from your vantage point, and then what you thought only 2 years later when there was a similar incident with the same outcome with Anthony Van Dyke? Do you remember the first thoughts that were going through your head?
Yeah, it's usually, well, this is going to cause a problem. This is not good, you know. And I saw Anthony Van Dyke in the corner of my eye in that Melbourne Cup this year, and you just think straight away, oh, no, you know. And I'm sure everybody thought that. I worry about the Melbourne Cup. I've worried about it for a long time. I adore the Melbourne Cup, and I read with great interest Jared Waitley's article that he wrote a day later, and in many respects I agree with him. I think we've got a problem now, and I don't think the worry about, for me, is that we are losing the romance of the Melbourne Cup. The fact, if you Googled the Melbourne Cup on the Wednesday after this year's race, we should have been, the nation should have been embracing Jai McNeil. They should have been embracing Lloyd Williams. They should have been embracing Twilight Payment. Every article was about a horse dying in the Melbourne Cup. The thing about the Melbourne Cup is it is watched by everybody in this country. It wouldn't matter if you're the boy that works at KFC or Sally the checkout chick at Coles or Joe the mechanic who is not interested in horse racing, but I tell you what, he turns the TV on when the Melbourne Cup's on or listens to the radio. And the other thing about the Melbourne Cup in Australia is we look at the Sydney way that they've tried to attack our carnival, and people want to deny that they have not attacked our carnival. Of course they have. And the sad thing about that is I lived in Sydney for 15 years, and everybody that worked in offices and in hairdressers exactly in Sydney, they had office sweeps for the Melbourne Cup. So the fact that even our own country are attacking our race, it's our greatest asset, the Melbourne Cup, in horse racing, and we want to eat it ourselves. It's craziness that everyone wants to attack the Melbourne Cup, which we should be protecting, because it's our shop window to outside the racing bubble. And I think the racing bubble is almost taking it for granted what we've had. And if we're not careful, if horses keep dying, and if we, and I'm talking about race clubs in Melbourne as well, they want to attack the Melbourne Cup. Mm. If we're not careful, the Melbourne Cup in 20 years will be like the Newmarket Handicap, and people in racing will take notice of it, but nobody else will. And I think that's really, really sad.
I think there's a couple of things going on there. One of them is the obvious. It's fatalities in our most famous sporting event with millions of people watching. The other is possible drifting away from the easy identification of the horses and the form lines because of the drop-ins from overseas that come and go. But I also think, and this is an issue for the VRC as much as anyone else, is the waning of community engagement, regardless of the internationals, at a very low level of community engagement. The basics, the absolute basics of providing a welcoming precinct that then provides interest in racing and then identifies the race as well. So I think they've got a bit on their hands. But
And the thing is, they know it. I mean, the fact that Racing Victoria got on the front foot with the whip issue, you know, that was terrific, because there are young people, when I say young people, there are 6- and 7-year-olds that would have watched that Melbourne Cup not understanding why the horses were being whipped. Now, I know racing people are going to sit back and say, you know, oh, that's a part of the sport, you know, grow up, you know, horses aren't affected by the whip and things. But what I'm saying is we need to understand what the outer sphere is thinking, because if we don't, we're going to be so irrelevant that, you know, it's not going to be worth it. So we have to understand, even if it's hard for those old-timers that have got horses out, you know, and look, I understand that people in the city don't understand that part of the sport either. You know, there have been people that have been around horses for 50 and 60 years that have a completely different understanding to the game and what you would call a latte sipper from North Melbourne. You know, they would have different opinions. But I think we still, in the racing bubble, need to understand that we need to be relevant to those people outside of it.
They're now soy latte sippers, so it's getting further and further away, Matty. Hey, just on all this, it's an impossible... Well, it's not impossible. There's a lot that Racing Victoria and the VRC and the industry itself has to do to try and arrest this situation and diminish and reduce the possibility of horses perishing in the Melbourne Cup. Do they need to get away from Werribee, veterinary requirements, overseas stables looking at themselves in the mirror and wondering if they're sending the right horses out? It's going to be the most important review process in the history of the Victorian racing, but it's also going to be one where whatever they do, there's no assurance that it won't happen again.
No, that's exactly right, and that's why it's so complex. And, you know, I acknowledge that it is so complex. It's not like we're putting obstacles in front of the horses. You know, they are racing, you know, over 3,200 metres on a beautiful race course. So why is it happening? Is it more research is required? I mean, you can't put MRI scans in the barrier stalls before the horses jump. I mean, it is so difficult, but I think there's obviously a some sort of common denominator there. Do we have to check these horses over and over again before they get on the plane?
I think that's what's going to be the number one. Yep, absolutely.
Because I think, you know, we've talked about how much the Melbourne Cup means to us as Australians, but does it mean more as much to the internationals who have got massive stables and they've got race meetings like the Breeders' Cup to worry about or the Champion Stakes or the Arc de Triomphe? What horses are they bringing here to start with? You know, is that the query? Do we have to really check them before they get on the plane? I don't know the answers to this, but all I know is what occurred on the last Tuesday in November probably has to stop, because unfortunately we're going to be tarnished forever if this continues.
Absolutely. And there's one more thing, and we haven't got much time, but what fascinates me too is this Racing Australia review of the overall calendar of Australian racing and carnivals, placement of races. Even little things that struck me were just in the last two or three weeks, we've got Ballarat Cup, Sandown, Pakenham Cup, all very close together at the tail end of the spring when the horses are probably looking for a paddock. There's a lot of like-for-like races, one after the other, at the very end of the spring. So whether something's not quite ideal about that and whether that sort of re-emphasises the issue about whether something has to be done about Sandown.
Yeah, I mean, I love Sandown, and I think it deserves a place, you know, in a bigger sphere. I think to run a Group 1 race at Sandown, you know, like they used to, it's such a great venue. But the only issue with moving Sandown, of course, the week after Melbourne Cup week, if you were to move it, I know there was some sort of proposal to make it more of a lead-up to the carnival, push it back into August, but if that was the case, you know, Sandown is the workhorse through the winter. So how are you going to get the track looking so magnificent and race so magnificent like it did the other day at that time of year? So that's really tricky. I like the idea of having the Country Cups, of having the Ballarat Cup and the Pakenham Cup. Would you argue that the turnover's lower as a result, though? Some punters wouldn't like that. So this is the biggest problem in racing, and we're never going to solve it, Matty, is that no one's ever going to agree. No one's ever going to agree. Everyone's competing against each other, and it's a real tricky one.
Well, and there'll be furious disagreement over a few reds when we have our final catch-up next week with a few other rapscallions as well. Hey, Matty, enjoy taking your foot off the pedal a little bit in the next few weeks. Is there a time-off period looming for you?
There will be next year with my little projects that I have on the side. I'm going to commentate the tennis again in January and Olympic Games next year, and there'll be a couple of little holidays around them. So No, next year there'll be a few little times to put my feet up, but we'll blast on towards Christmas. Matty, I think it's like everybody, where do you go at the moment? It's been impossible to get away, hasn't it, because of borders closing and things.
No, that's right.
Head down, bum up, call the races, love every minute of it, and looking forward to this weekend. We've got Moonee Valley, and I'm heading to the Terrelgan Cup on Sunday, so looking forward to that.
All right, and I'll see you for lunch on Thursday, young man.
Yeah, I better not over race too much on Thursday. It's a busy weekend, but I reckon I might.
Right, I'm sure you will. Good on you, Matty. Some interesting discussion points. Thanks for that.